It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Jerry Willis.
I'm Steve Ducey.
I'm Shannon Bream, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Monday, May 6, 2024, I'm Mike Emanuel. With anti-Israel protests spreading to more college campuses in recent days, many are asking who is bankrolling the disruption to American society, with some in Congress demanding answers.
There needs to be further investigation as to where the funding is coming from and why these protests are being funded by these left-wing organizations.
I'm Chris Foster. Something's in the air. Allergy season has gotten longer and more intense.
You tend to see people coming in with what's called an irritant reaction, where the pollen is just getting into the nasal passages, aggravating them. And when you have something foreign, anything foreign in the nasal passages, it makes you sneeze, it makes you have a runny nose.
And I'm former Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
War in the Middle East shows no sign of letting up. Florida Republican Senator Marco Rubio says the United States must lead.
This is a time where we need to have not a weak and feeble president, but someone who makes it very clear that we are on Israel's side. They are the good guys in this fight, and Hamas are the evil ones. And these terrible civilian casualties that are happening is because Hamas is using them as human shields.
Israeli officials are trying to negotiate a temporary ceasefire in exchange for hostages who have been held since October 7th. Connecticut Democrat Congressman Jim Himes says cutting a deal is difficult.
Well, of course, they're not good faith negotiators. They're terrorists, right? And you know, they will do whatever they need to do to advance their own interests. Now, in any negotiation, particularly a negotiation like this, you know, people have interests, even if they are terrorists. And obviously, Hamas has an interest in ceasing, at least temporarily, the obliteration of their military capabilities.
Closer to home, the big issue at the moment is anti-Israel protests on many college campuses, in many cases making Jewish students feel unsafe at their own schools. New York Republican Congresswoman Elise Stefanik blasts what she says is a lack of leadership.
Our university presidents, whether it's Columbia, whether it's Harvard, Penn, whether it's UCLA, Michigan, Yale, the list goes on, they have failed to protect Jewish students.
President Biden spoke to the nation about the issue late last week, trying to lay out what is acceptable and what is not.
But let me be clear. Peaceful protest in America. Violent protest is not protected. Peaceful protest is. Dissent is essential to democracy, but dissent must never lead to disorder or to denying the rights of others so students can finish the semester and their college education.
As many have been disturbed by what we're witnessing at many of the nation's top academic institutions.
Well, I think the response by President Biden and the administration and leading Democrats, including Chuck Schumer, the highest ranking Jewish official in American history, has been tepid at best.
New York Republican Congressman Mike Lawler.
And really is a failure of leadership on a number of levels. Obviously, starting with these institutions of higher learning, these college and university presidents have failed in their obligations to ensure the safety and well-being of all students. And I think within the Democratic Party, you see a fracture. You see, electoral political considerations taking more precedent over the safety and well-being of Jewish Americans. And I think it's wrong. Obviously, you know, we can sit and debate policy of the Israeli government. We can sit and debate the situation in the Middle East. But when these protests turn anti-Semitic, when they turn violent, when that violence intimidates and threatens Jewish students, it's wholly unacceptable. And it requires leadership at every level to not only condemn it, but to act. And I think that's, you know, I went to Columbia. I met with President Shafik. I made it very clear that they needed to crack down on this. I called for her resignation. And last week we passed my bill, the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act, which will require the Department of Education to use the IRA working definition of anti-Semitism when prosecuting these Title VI violations of the 1964 Civil Rights Act.
Congressman, everywhere I go, I get the question of who is funding these protests. So I'll ask you the question, and do you think perhaps it's a foreign adversary trying to stir division in this country?
Well, look at the situation with respect to TikTok, right? And the concerns that many of us in Congress have had with respect to the Chinese Communist Party and how they utilize that app to not only collect data on Americans, but manipulate our young people. And mm-hmm. you look at these protests on college campuses, you see they involve paid agitators. They involve people who are not students at these universities. There is a very coordinated effort across the board. And on some of the reporting that we've seen, you have these left-wing organizations funded by George Soros, funded by David Rockefeller, and other left-wing billionaires, many of whom, by the way, support Joe Biden. And so it's disconcerting, to say the least. And obviously, I think there needs to be further investigation as to where the funding is coming from and, mm-hmm. and why these protests are being funded by these left-wing organizations.
House Republicans are digging in, taking a closer look at college funding by the federal government amid these protests. What are you and your colleagues hoping to find as you look into this issue?
Well, obviously, we want to make sure that there's not nefarious purposes going on here with respect mm-hmm. to where these funds are coming from. Some of these institutions take significant money from foreign governments, and that's something that we should really be looking at. We should be looking at their endowments. We should be looking at the fact that the federal government spends billions of dollars on education, and you know these institutions are not enforcing the law with respect to the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and discrimination on their campuses. And so, you know, this is something where Speaker Johnson announced we're going to be taking a much broader look at what is happening on these college campuses. Multiple committees will be involved in this investigation. And, you know, I think it's incumbent on Congress to act. One of the bills that I had previously introduced would defund institutions of higher learning if they promote or sanction anti-Semitic events on their campuses. And unfortunately, that's what we're seeing across the board.
You sit on the House Foreign Affairs Committee. What updates can you share about the war against Israel? And how likely is a ceasefire with hostages returning to Israel and the United States?
Well, obviously, we still have Americans and Israeli citizens and citizens from other countries as well that are being held hostage. Hamas has refused to agree to release these hostages, which is why there's not a ceasefire. As I've said many times, the fastest way for a ceasefire to occur is for Hamas to surrender and the hostages to be released. The failure to do that is what is allowing this war to continue. You know, obviously, the administration has been working to try and negotiate, working with the Qatari government, as well as Egypt and other allies to try and negotiate the release of these hostages. But Israel, my bottom line is Israel has a right to defend itself. Nobody would tell the United States after 9/11 that, you know, we should have a ceasefire with Al-Qaeda. You know, ultimately, terrorism needs to be rooted out. It is a vile stain on our society, on our world. And you're dealing with individuals who don't want peace, you know, and they don't believe in Israel's fundamental right to exist. And so, you know, when you're dealing with that situation, it's kind of hard to negotiate a peace agreement.
Avril Haines, the director of national intelligence, testified this past week that the war in Ukraine is unlikely to end anytime soon. What is your assessment? Do you agree with her?
Well, obviously, you know, Vladimir Putin continues his march to try and, you know, take control of Ukraine, which would have dire consequences around the globe. You have an unholy alliance between China, Russia, and Iran, and they are seeking to undermine and destabilize the United States, Europe, and the free world. And so, you know, ultimately, this is a battle of good versus evil, and Ukraine needs to continue to defend itself. Obviously, we have passed, you know, funds to support them in that effort, but this is important not just to Ukraine, but to the U.S. and Europe. And so, look, right now, you know, I think the now that the foreign aid package is passed, the question is, how do we get to a place of success in Ukraine, and what does that look like? And I think the administration needs to do a much better job of defining that and working with Congress to make sure that we are successful in Ukraine and what that may look like. But, you know, certainly for the time being, there is not a negotiated settlement. And so, you know, this war is going to continue in Ukraine.
The crisis at our southern border has been a red hot issue for the past few years. Since we are in political season ahead of the presidential election, when the entire House of Representatives is on the ballot, do you expect that this will get passed on to the next administration, whether it be Biden 2.0 or Trump 2.0, to figure out?
Well, look, this is a crisis of Joe Biden's own making by reversing so many of the policies of the Trump administration. We've seen the floodgates open at our southern border, over 10 million migrants since Joe Biden took office. This is his mess that he created. The House has acted. We have passed H.R. 2. We have passed a number of measures dealing with the border. And Chuck Schumer and Senate Democrats for almost a year now have refused to take up H.R. 2. They have not passed a border security package through the Senate. We have. And so I do believe, you know, based on the Biden administration's refusal to secure our borders, refusal to enforce customs and immigration law, catch and release, which is an absolute disaster. Yes, it will be on the next administration to deal with this because Senate Democrats and Joe Biden refuse to act.
House Speaker Mike Johnson is expected to face a challenge this week from Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, trying to move to make the motion to vacate the speakership this week. What do you think of this effort, and what does it do for House Republicans when you have this narrow majority and it's seen as infighting amongst yourselves?
Well, I think it's idiotic. Clearly, some of my colleagues haven't learned the lesson of October, where it took us 3.5 weeks to elect Speaker Johnson after the absurd and stupid removal of Kevin McCarthy. Mm-hmm. But this is, you know, a continuation of some of my colleagues who continually undermine the majority rather than focus on how to work together as a team. They continue to put their own interests ahead of the conference, ahead of the Congress, and ahead of the country. And I just think it is not helpful, especially 6 months out from an election, to be dealing with nonsense like this.
Do you worry it sends a message to voters that Republicans cannot govern?
I think it sends a message to voters about the overall dysfunction of Washington. You know, look at Senate Democrats. They have not exactly been able to pass very much through the Senate. But it is a continuation of the dysfunction in Washington, which is why voters hold Congress in such low esteem. But, you know, from my vantage point, in a district like mine that Joe Biden won by 10 points, that has 80,000 more Democrats than Republicans, you know, I feel good about the work that I'm doing and what we're doing to support my district. And I think voters respect that. So I'm not too concerned about it. But obviously, you know, we have a lot of work to do. And this is a distraction that nobody needs.
Congressman Mike Lawler of the great state of New York, grateful for your time. Have a wonderful week.
Thanks, Mike. Take care.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
This is former Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard with your Fox News commentary coming up.
Itchy eyes, a runny nose, sneezing, trouble breathing, headaches. About 1 in 4 adults and 1 in 5 kids in the U.S. report suffering from seasonal allergies, according to the Centers for Disease Control. That was as of 3 years ago, and if you ask around, it sure seems like more people than ever are sharing in the misery.
The pollen is thick as it's like coming down like snow right now.
This is the first time in my life I have allergies. I have noticed that I have itchy eyes and runny nose, and I also have a lot of throat pain.
Not their imagination. There really is more pollen in the air than there used to be, and that has more people complaining they have allergy symptoms, and they're worse.
They're definitely more prevalent now, partially because we've had a lot more mild winters.
Dr. Tanya Elliott's an allergist and spokesperson for the American College of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology.
And then we also end up having this snowstorm dump in March, but then the ground doesn't freeze again. So then that gives the pollen this jump start with so much moisture to then go crazy. So we tend to see people like late March, early April coming in with really bad allergy symptoms. Another thing that's important to note is that pollen in the air in high concentrations is an aggravator to anyone, whether or not they have allergies. So you tend to see people coming in with what's called an irritant reaction, where the pollen is just getting into the nasal passages, aggravating them. And when you have something foreign, anything foreign in the nasal passages, it makes you sneeze, it makes you have a runny nose, it triggers the release of histamine, which causes that itching, redness, and swelling.
Oh, so interesting. So what we think of is allergies, and for some people, it isn't really allergies. It's just an irritant.
Exactly. And so when we say allergies, what we mean is antibodies in the blood, circulating in the blood against something that's normally occurring in the environment. So by definition, clinically, you have to demonstrate that somebody actually has these antibodies in their blood, and then they're diagnosed with an allergy.
All right. Well, has the spring allergy season been longer or more intense or both?
We have seen longer seasons, again, because of the late in this season snowfall, the above average precipitation, warmer than usual winters and temperatures, and then later time till the first frost. So you're really not in the clear from an allergy season perspective until all the leaves fall off the trees in the first frost.
Somebody who's never had problems as a kid, you know, no breathing problems, no allergy symptoms, suddenly is a middle-aged allergic person, you'd think that tolerance builds up, but or is it what's happening now just past the threshold of what used to not bother you?
So it's a few different things. So school age, we see a peak, then we see another peak when somebody's 17 to 21, and then we see another peak age 35 to 50. Then we start to see allergies in the blood going down. But what tends to happen is over the age of 50, you become much more sensitive to what we call non-allergic rhinitis. So that's what I was talking about before. When you have those allergy symptoms in the nasal passages, it's because your mucosa, so like the stuff that causes, you know, boogers and mucus, starts to get less prominent.
What's allergies, or what are allergic symptoms, and what's a cold? Or does it matter if you're just treating the symptoms anyway and they're the same symptoms? Maybe it doesn't matter. But how can you tell, or can you tell, what you're dealing with?
There are a couple of things that can help you distinguish between allergies and a cold. Number one is allergies don't cause a fever. So if you have a fever, or if you have swollen lymph nodes, then it's likely infectious. Number two, allergies last longer. So it's really about like the timing of your symptoms. So if you're like, oh my gosh, I have a cold, but it lasts for 3 months, like from March and through June, that's probably allergies.
So what do we do about it? I mean, talk about medication and just also physical things in the world to do to feel better and not get hit by as much exposure in the first place.
First thing first is understanding what your triggers are. So it's identifying exactly what you're allergic to, seeing an allergist, you can get a blood test or a skin test. There are also some companies that do this stuff online, or you can get a home test. Once we know what you're allergic to, we make some recommendations and avoidance of triggers. So for pollen specifically, we actually say keep the windows closed and the air conditioning on, but before you turn on your air conditioner, clean out your vents. Don't wear your shoes in the house. Make sure that you implement an afternoon or evening shower just to wash all of the pollen off. So you want to make sure that you address it right at the door. Air filters can also help, but only for certain allergies. So they help for pet allergies and they help for pollen allergies. Air filters or purifiers do not help for dust mite allergies, because dust mites are too big and they settle into furniture. So what you need for that is actually a HEPA vacuum to vacuum it up, but they won't be suspended in the air.
Okay. Yeah, but what you're saying is a lot of people could be feeling a lot better if they just went to the trouble to allow themselves to feel better.
Yes, but if you don't want to go through the trouble, we can talk about medication options. And so if you're someone who's like, I don't want to take something every day, I forget to take something every day, you may want to opt for symptom relief instead with an antihistamine. If you're someone who says, I don't want to experience allergy symptoms, I'm sick of this, I'm miserable every single day, then you should probably be on a daily medication that prevents you from having an allergy attack. So things like nasal steroid sprays or nasal antihistamine sprays. There's also an option called allergen immunotherapy. And we give you small amounts of what you're allergic to and build up that tolerance for you over time. The catch there is it's a 3 to 5 year commitment to be on that. But then at the end of it, you don't have allergies anymore. So it really kind of depends on what type of person you are and how bad your symptoms are.
What about, I don't mean food allergies, but is there anything we can do in our diet to make the allergy symptom, the allergies we're talking about better?
So imagine you're eating foods that are high in this chemical histamine, and then you're exposed to all these allergens that are triggering the release of your own body's histamine. So low histamine diet, foods that contain high histamine, you're not going to want to hear this, but things like alcohol and red wine, aged cheese, all these fine things in life, processed meats like prosciutto and stuff like that, they all actually have a high histamine content, strawberry, pineapples also. So you can consider a low histamine diet. The other thing that I recommend to some of my patients who want to try like natural ways, quercetin, so foods that are high in quercetin, like blueberries, things that are like a turmeric latte, I will sometimes recommend, because these things tend to just modify your immune system and calm down inflammation. So I say, like, look, on the margin, it's not going to hurt. It may help a little bit. It's not going to be as good as medications. But if there's something you can do in your diet, why not? There's no harm in it.
My grandmother was a big proponent in the, I don't want to ask you if it's a myth or not, eat your local honey. It'll get you, it'll develop a tolerance to whatever's in the air. Is that just like a grandma thing, or is there something to it?
The mechanism is you have bees. They go from plant to plant to plant, and then they produce honey. And within that honey, there is pollen. So it's almost like immunotherapy. Like, you're getting small amounts of pollen, right? And then if you take more and more of higher concentration of honey, you could theoretically become immune to whatever pollen is present in that honey. Here's the difference between that and immunotherapy. Here's a challenge. Number one, these bees will pollinate very brightly colored flowers typically, and they tend to not be the type of pollen that people are allergic to. But so that's the challenge. The second challenge is you have no control over the concentration of that protein, and you really do need to build up that protein in a methodical way over time, and there's no way for us to tell. And then the third thing is, again, the variation of what types of pollen are in this honey. I suspect that people feel better because honey actually has a very soothing effect to the throat. And we recommend honey lozenges and things like that when someone has a sore throat. And one of the symptoms of allergies is post-nasal drainage. You have a lot of mucus in your nasal passages and it drains down into the back of your throat. And so that honey, it, over time, is going to provide a nice soothing coating.
Let me ask you the peanut allergy thing with kids. I know that everybody says this. When I was a kid, kids didn't have peanut allergies, or maybe, you know, a couple of kids. It was a rare thing, and now more and more kids do. Why is that? And then talk about the protocols. Are things changing? Are we trying to introduce kids more to peanuts?
Yeah. So here's what happened. We, you know, the American Academy of Pediatrics and other organizations made a recommendation a whole bunch of years ago that said you need to delay the introduction of peanut until the age of two. So what happened was this food was removed from the diet, but big brothers and sisters were eating peanut and peanut butter and jelly and all that sort of stuff. So the initial exposure for a lot of people to peanut, or a lot of infants to peanut, was through the skin. And the skin is actually the largest immune system organ in the body and recognizes things that break through the skin barrier as foreign. So if the initial exposure is through the skin, and then after the age of two, the kid gets introduced to peanut, they're more likely to say, oh, wait, that was that foreign thing that I somehow got exposed to through contact, and I'm going to have an allergic reaction to it. So that's one reason why peanut in particular is on the rise. But we also have milk allergy and egg allergy and nut allergy and all these others. And there are a few other reasons. One relates to the gut microbiome and actually the increased incidence of two things: antibiotics and C-sections. And we're realizing now that the more prevalent C-sections and the use of antibiotics are either maternally or at an early age, the gut microbiome changes and shifts, essentially skews or messes up your immune system and makes your immune system more allergic in general. And then the good news is there's actually treatment now for food allergies where there really wasn't historically. There was a FDA just approved a medication for the treatment of people with multiple food allergies. It's called Xolair, and it basically calms down the immune system such that you don't react to trace amounts of these foods. It's not going to cure food allergies, but it helps people live in the world not worrying that if they accidentally eat something that may have contained a small amount of peanut or another nut, that they can be okay. And that's very reassuring for people.
Dr. Tanya Elliott, allergist, spokesperson for the American College of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology. What's that, like a trade association?
Yeah, it's our national organization. Like there's American Heart Association, American Lung Association. We just tended to choose a whole bunch more letters in our in our association.
Dr. Tanya Elliott, thank you very much. I hope people learn some stuff and maybe feel better.
Thanks for having me.
Here's a look at the week ahead.
Monday, a federal court will hear arguments challenging the constitutionality of North Carolina's voter ID law. The suit argues that the law is discriminatory. Supporters say it's one of the least restrictive voter ID laws in the nation. Tuesday, the president will make remarks at the annual Holocaust Memorial Ceremony. The speech will focus on the rise of anti-Semitism in the U.S. Also on Tuesday, Apple will unveil a number of products, including the new iPads and new content on their Apple TV Plus service. Wednesday, the 1970 Beatles documentary Let It Be returns to the small screen. Disney Plus will stream a remastered version of the film that saw the Fab Four record their final studio album. Thursday, President Biden will host the WNBA champion Las Vegas Aces at the White House to commemorate the first franchise repeat as women's basketball champions since 2002. And that's a look at your week ahead. I'm Tom Graham, Fox News.
I'm Benjamin Hall, Fox News correspondent and New York Times bestselling author. Join me for my brand new podcast, Searching for Heroes. Make sure you subscribe to this series wherever you download podcasts and leave a rating and review.
Rate and review the Fox News Rundown on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Tulsi Gabbard.
What's on your mind?
We have no time to waste. We live in troubled times. Our nation is bitterly divided. Our future as a republic, as a union, appears bleak. The news, the noise, the insanity, the darkness, this is something that many of us want to shut out. There are times when all I want to do is grab my surfboard and paddle out into the ocean or go for a hike in the mountains and appreciate the peace and majesty of Mother Nature. But there is too much at stake in this moment to put our heads in the sand and just go about our daily lives with blinders on, hoping that the insanity will fade away. Now, I joined the Democratic Party in Hawaii in 2002 because at that time I saw a party that appeared to be the party of the people, a party that valued free speech, welcoming all comers into a big tent where the sharing of diverse opinions and views on issues was encouraged. It was a party that fought for civil liberties and rights. The party I joined over 20 years ago no longer exists today. I could no longer remain in today's Democratic Party, which is now under the complete control of an elitist cabal of warmongers fueled by cowardly wokeness who divide us by racializing every issue and stoking anti-white racism, actively working to undermine our God-given freedoms enshrined in our Constitution. They are hostile to people of faith and spirituality, demonize the police and protect criminals at the expense of law-abiding Americans, allow our borders to remain open while claiming they are quote-unquote secure, weaponizing the national security state to go after political opponents, and above all, are dragging us closer to nuclear war with each passing day. I left the Democratic Party and became an independent. For the sake of our country, peace, freedom, and our hope for a prosperous future, I urge you to do the same. as we look to the way ahead and how we will forge our path through the darkness and toward a brighter future for all Americans, the spirit of aloha serves as the torch that will guide us through. What is aloha? While you may be familiar with aloha as a word that's often used as a greeting, it really means so much more than that. The word alo means to share, and ha refers to the eternal life force within each of us. Aloha recognizes that we are all connected in a spiritual sense as children of God. Knowing this truth inspires how we should relate to each other and how we can come together to defend our God-given freedoms enshrined in the Constitution against those who seek to take them away. We live in the greatest country in the world, filled with the potential for us to build a brighter future and a more perfect union where every American can live free, in peace, and with opportunity for prosperity. A future where we celebrate free speech and respect each other as children of God and as Americans, even if we disagree on an issue or a policy. This is the country our founders envisioned for us, and it is my fervent hope that we come together, remembering the foundational principles that connect us as Americans to make that vision a reality. It's up to us, all of us, to make it happen. Will you join me? Aloha. I'm former Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard, and I have just read an excerpt from my new book, For Love of Country, Leave the Democrat Party Behind. The book is available for sale now on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Audible, and wherever you get your books.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com.
Hey, it's Clay Travis. Join me for Outkick, the show, as we dive deep into a mix of topics. New episodes available Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform, and watch directly on outkick.com/watch.